Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I'm Jason Snell. I bring you this show every week, but the star of the show is across the internet from me. It's Tim Goodman from The Hollywood Reporter, chief TV critic, of course. Hi.
Hi, Jason. I probably shouldn't be laughing at that, should I?
That's You're the star funny. Of the... Do, 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 do. Tim Goodman. Something like that. Spotlights.
Yes.
Yeah. So, hi. Not a lot going on right now in the grand scheme of things. I don't know if we've got stuff coming up. The big thing is that today is the 20th anniversary of my favorite television show of all time, which is Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And it turns out the 15th anniversary of The Shield, and you and Dan did a nice piece on The Hollywood Reporter where you did that little back and forth thing where you guys talked about both of those shows and sort of like your experience watching them and then sort of what their legacy has been, which was a lot of fun to read.
Yeah, it was fun to do. We definitely didn't want to like ignore The Shield. 15 years is a long time. I was stunned as well. Like the whole thing about Buffy being 20, I was like, what? How is that even possible? You know, it's also I've watched so much TV I have a bad memory maybe. So that was part of it. It really did prompt some like going back and like looking at it and saying, oh, okay, yeah, I remember this. It actually made me want to rewatch Buffy with my kids. I think I'm going to try that, get them turned onto it. I really appreciate both of them. They were just completely different, but kind of amazing. And it was Dan and I had a really good time going back and forth on that.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, you pointed out, like, what was the legacy? Buffy was on the WB, it switched to UPN, and then as it went off the air, basically, UPN and the WB kind of, that was about when they imploded and ended up becoming the CW. Mm-hmm. And, but I think, you know, you look at Buffy, and you can see its legacy in the sense that there are genre shows that take themselves seriously now in a way that maybe didn't happen as often before Buffy. Joss Whedon said it on an interview that I saw, I think it was on THR actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was, he didn't name names, but he's like, you know, they didn't prove, he said, that quality and that content would be a success, because there have been other shows that have not had the quality but have been a success. But the fact is that you look at stuff like Supernatural, and I mean, there are all these long-running shows that are in this genre that are using a format that I think, you know, was that Buffy really kind of brought together and took its own premise seriously. The idea, which I always love, of the parable of all the horrors that we all experience in high school and during adolescence in general are literal horrors in Buffy. I mean, there's so much that show kind of led to in the sense of just genre shows being taken seriously and taking mm-hmm. themselves seriously. So really, if you look at what's on CW now, Buffy is almost like the prescription for what you should do on the CW. Not just all the superhero shows, but Supernatural is a good example. iZombie is a great example of a show like that. Those are all those kind of shows.
Yeah, and it was fun to go back and you know, look at it, because it does have such a legacy. And I thought it was kind of funny, and this just sort of tells me, like, my head's been sort of swimming the last couple of weeks. But when The Americans was debuting this week, I was doing like a little, you know, ranking. You saw that on Twitter when I was doing that. And yeah. I was like, you know,
that was the premise was like 5 years of sustained excellence. So like Friday Night Lights gets kicked out because season two was terrible, right? Even though the rest of the show was great. And how many shows had 5 years of sustained excellence?
It's really not, there's not that mm-hmm. many. And I, you know, there's certainly four strong ones. And I think you can make the sense that I think Game of Thrones will be there. They've already passed there in six seasons. And, you know, there's other ones. And it was funny because I was caught thinking like top five rather than like top 10 or like a collection, like a non-numerical collection of shows. As soon as I tweeted that out, it was like, Buffy, and you being one of them. And it's really true, especially when I went back, like just a day or two later to start doing some of these lookups, with Dan and looking at the show. I watched that show beginning to end, and yeah, I just, I, I'm, I don't know if I'm put it, I wouldn't put it in the top five, but certainly in the top 10. And it was just so important and such a game changer, not only just for how stories were told on television in the genre thing, but it was, it really great way to metaphorically look at teen life, and just also like a really fun show. I remember every week wanting to watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, I mean, it was that great combination of all those things, of having that kind of meaning, but also having a fun monster of the week kind of storyline, and there were jokes, and because Joss Whedon is a very funny writer, just putting that all together in a stew, right, where you get like, yeah, I remember high school, it was just like that, except now that instead of feeling invisible, the person is actually literally invisible, and it's like, yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, it was great.
I mean, like I said, it's one of my favorites, and I think it just did so many things well that you look back on it now, and it's and it's been influential on all those things. So it's worth mentioning it. I think even for people who are not, I mean, that's the thing, is even if you're not a fan of the genre conventions, and I'm not a horror guy at all, so the horror genre convention sort of means nothing to me. But you know, like, we were all teenagers, and that's difficult and awkward and funny, and young adults, which is what Buffy turned into. It wasn't just about high school, it was about becoming an adult and taking responsibility and finding out who you are. And over 7 years they got to do that. I didn't like the last 2 years as much, but they were fine, and the first 5 years are spectacular. So I thought it was interesting you put in a word for Glory as the big bad. By the way, we talk about season-long arcs and big bads, and there were season-long arcs before Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but I feel like they perfected it, where like the story was the season, and at the end of the season the story came to an end. It didn't just sort of cliffhanger into another season. And Joss Whedon and Buffy really did coin the idea of the big bad. Like, literally that phrase comes from Buffy, and you've seen that influence too. Glory, she had nice shoes. She had nice clothes, and that was such a great, like, Cordelia was always the, you know, kind of, she's beautiful and dresses well and is popular and she's super annoying. But then Glory, where you had your kind of titanic supervillain with incredible powers and comes from beyond the universe. And it's this, it's Claire Kramer. It's this blonde woman with who dresses perfectly and looks like she's just like Buffy's equivalent, but is super evil. It's like, what a great idea for a villain that was.
It was great. And she was very, I loved that she was so sassy, because when they would fight and they'd go back and forth, because, you know, look, no show does the monologuing better back and forth between villains than Buffy did. Mm. They really perfected that in a kind of arch and funny way. But those two together, they could talk up a storm. They were quip mistresses, and they were very good at it. But there's a lot. I mean, certainly the big bad, that's in the legacy. Like, that's, people just put that into their shows now. And
we're gonna do a season-long story with a big bad who's the primary villain, and at the end we're gonna resolve it, and then the next season will tell a slightly different story. It's like, yeah, okay, that's Buffy template. Every single season is that template.
Yeah, I think that's very astute about saying that they weren't the first to create like a season-long person, but like they really did perfect it, and they did lock the door on it at the end, and then they were introduced somebody else. And that's such a convention now, but they were one of the early adopters, and they really did perfect it.
Also, season-ending cliffhangers were in vogue in this period, and one of the things I really liked about Buffy is, with a couple exceptions, but mostly the idea was that the story ended at the season. So, like, Buffy, they didn't know if they were going to get a second season. They assumed they weren't, I think. And they did their 16 episodes or whatever it was for that first season, 12 episodes, and it has an ending. Like, the show ends. It has an ending. And then the second season, they did the same thing. It's not like there aren't some threads dangling, but, like, you felt, going into the summer, where that show was not going to be with you anymore for months, you felt like you had finished a book in a series, but still, you finished the book, the story was over, you know, and you'd see your friends again in the fall. And I thought that they did a good job doing that. That was a viewer-friendly thing to do it that way.
Yeah, and I think this, just lastly on this, what this did do, you know, pinprick of nostalgia waking me up, the thing that it did, and I may write a separate story about this too. And it could be just that there's so much television, and because I do it for a living, I've lost that feeling, even though I was doing it for a living back then. But, like, it just reminded me, like, God, I loved watching Buffy every week and, like, waiting for it. Like, and then there, and then I started to think, okay, what other shows did I really want to see And it was like Buffy and Battlestar Galactica and, you know, Mad Men, Sopranos, but Lost and, yeah. and Buffy were the ones where I, you know, good, really great network series. And to some extent, West Wing as well, where I just was like, really want to see what this show is next week. And I don't think I really, other than Got, I don't think Game of Thrones, I don't really think I have that so much now.
Yeah, Game of Thrones is the one where I'm gonna watch it the night of. Mm-hmm. I mean, Doctor Who is like that for me, but that's just me. You know, I have a problem and I'm not seeking a cure. But right. Game of Thrones is absolutely like that, where it's just like that's an event. Like the moment that it's on, I am going to watch that show, and that's yeah. the one that imparts that feeling to me. That's mm-hmm. the same feeling as Lost or Buffy. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think I need to come up with how I can define without slighting shows that I really like.
But it's like the imperative or the, I mean, there's some, I know what you're saying, that there is the compulsion to watch mm-hmm. it immediately. Mm-hmm. And it's not even because you want to be part of the water cooler conversation or the tweets or whatever. It's because it's that compulsion of like, this is what I anticipate. You know, I have that, there are like four shows that air on Wednesday nights that I want to watch. And they're, you know, it's like, I don't watch them Wednesday night. Generally, I watch them like Thursday and Friday and I spool yeah. them out over time. But Game of Thrones does not get watched on Monday, right? It is a Sunday right. night thing. And Buffy was a Tuesday night thing. In fact, my daughter was born on a Wednesday morning on the Tuesday night we're in the hospital and we're waiting, and you know those labor things can go on for a very long time. My wife's labors were extremely long. We were in the hospital for a very long time, and it was a Tuesday night, and I said to my wife while she was laboring, I said, you want to watch the Buffy musical? Because it was I know when the Buffy musical aired, because it was the day before my daughter was born. And she's like, no. And I don't even know when she watched it, weeks later in a haze at post baby. But like Tuesday night, it was an event. It was a huge event.
Yeah, there's something about it that I think the other equivalent in that is that it has to be fun. I would just say that as much as I love The Americans, and I've already been on record at saying it's the best show on TV, and I love watching it, but the fun part of certain shows, whether it's Buffy or Lost or, you know, X-Files in its prime, that I miss that feeling. So that's just a little nostalgia for me.
Yeah, essential. It's almost essential. Like mm-hmm. I have to watch it now. I don't know. There's a word for it for sure. Well, anyway, so it's good to think back with a little tinge of nostalgia. All that stuff is available on streaming, by the way. It's an HD, so occasionally there's these weird things where like you see lights in the corner because they didn't crop it right, because it wasn't meant to be shown in widescreen. But it does look pretty good given its age, because they shot it on film. And it's worth a revisit. I rewatched season one of Buffy for an Incomparable podcast last year, and it was a lot of fun to do it. And I had forgotten some stuff about how much I loved certain things. And then there's other stuff that, you know, 20 years later I look at and I'm like, like Xander, he's kind of a jerk. Like at the time I like identified with him as like not too far out of being a teenager. And now I look and I'm like, boy, that guy is really bad and dumb, but it's worth revisiting and visiting. If you haven't ever seen it, go back, just because it's a silly name. I mean, it's a good show. It's a great show.
Yeah. It's on Hulu, by the way.
All right.
If you didn't say that. Yeah, it's on Hulu. All seven seasons.
All seven seasons.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What else is going on? Is there anything else going on? It seems like things are pretty quiet otherwise in TV
yeah,
land.
Yeah, pretty slow. As Dan and I will tell you, this is the period where we're taking our deep breath for April, which is in absolute insanity, like day one to day 30. It's going to be nutty. And I think both of us are going to try to sneak away. I know I am for a week, so I'm trying to watch things in advance. So we are enjoying this little lull in
your stockpiling
in
material
March.
Now.
Yeah. And then we're kind of like, hey, can we get, I'm thinking to myself and I'm saying, okay, let's get American Gods earlier. Can we get Fargo in? Can we get,
right.
you know, everything that we need to watch as it's coming out in April. Can we get that in a hurry, please?
Oh, yeah. American Gods, man. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. It's all coming.
Doctor Who's coming back, baby.
Yeah. It's all, yeah. It's, yeah, April. It's another wave of it. So we're in the slack time now, but it's gonna come back to bite us. Well, I've got a lot of letters here, so maybe we should just turn it over to the listeners. Mm-hmm. Before we do that, I'm gonna stop for our second and final for another year. You won't have to hear this, but for now, this is the time of year when we remind you how to support the TV Talk machine. We do occasionally Woo-hoo! Have ads, but a lot of our support comes from members. I believe my wife, the CFO of The Incomparable, cut you a check last week.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah. Just wait for it. It's coming. It's in the mail. The check is for real. It. Check is in the mail.
Thank you, people.
So by becoming a member of The Incomparable, you can support us. You can sign up for a monthly or annual pledge and support this podcast directly. So go to theincomparable.com/members to sign up. You'll be asked to pick the shows on the network you'd like to support. So if you just want to support TV Talk Machine and have that money come to me and to Tim for putting this together, you can just do that. You sign up and then you check the box, just like we do. We check the box whenever we swear. You check the box that says TV Talk Machine, and after a few fees and for housekeeping stuff are taken out, all of your contribution will come to us. If there are other network shows you listen to and also like, great, check their boxes too. We'll share the money. But if you just want to support TV Talk Machine, you can absolutely do that. And members get a bunch of extras. You get exclusive bonus audio, a live bootleg feed of The Incomparable. There's a members-only Slack group, including a TV Talk Machine channel, and I usually pop in there on Friday and say, anybody got any questions? That's a thing that happens. Right. And so since this is pledge season, also many of the shows on the network will be posting bonus episodes. We've posted already like a half a dozen bonus episodes that are just for members. And Tim and I are going to do a little bonus episode where I'm going to ask Tim to schedule his own streaming service, create his Woo-hoo! Own Tim TV. And you can get that if you're a member. So contribution levels are $5, $10, and $20 a month. There are annual equivalents if you only want to have your credit card charged one time. And if you're already a member, it's actually really easy. If you want to increase your pledge to a higher level and get some special goodies in return, it's very easy to do that at the same page. So go to theincomparable.com/members to sign up. Thank you very much. And that is the end of the pledge drive for TV Talk Machine for 2017. Putting it back in the box.
Very nice, though.
Somebody asked, are you going to do these interminable pledge drives every week? And the answer is no. It's the first couple weeks in March, and then we're done. And then we will shut up for another year. But thank you for supporting the show.
Yeah, we do like support.
We do. We appreciate it. So our friend Indy Sarah wrote in.
Yay.
As she says, with love from the 317. She says, I love detectorists. Thank you, Tim.
Yes. Mm.
I wonder if humans is like Battlestar Galactica. And I hope The Handmaid's Tale is fantastic. So I don't know what she means by this. I was trying to detect this. I mean, they are both sort of about like robots that might or might not be alive and might or might not kill people.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I haven't really thought about it more than that. I'm really enjoying Humans, by the way. I know it aired in the UK in the fall, and I think I'm in a couple episodes behind now, but I am very happy with how that second season is going. They have not dropped the ball at all. It's very good.
Yeah, me too. I'm also a couple of episodes behind, but I'm loving every bit of it.
Carrie Ann Moss, that whole like Silicon Valley angle that's going in, like how that relates to what's happening with this emergence of conscious robots is just
I will say, when they keep saying it's in San Francisco and stuff, I'm like, oh no, that is not even remotely like San Francisco.
It looks very much like, I mean, I know they probably shot in the UK somewhere, right? Because it all is. But I just sort of in my head canon, I just put that down as like, it's like South Bay. It's Mountain View or something. Right. It's next to Stanford, and they've got trees and stuff. But there's a lot of greenery.
There's a lot of green.
And space that would probably not be there. If it was there, I wanted to mention, related to Humans and detectorists, like British TV, there's a new, this is crazy. So there's now a second British TV themed streaming service that was announced, which is called BritBox, which goes alongside Acorn. It's a competitor to Acorn. And BritBox is it's a combination of the BBC and ITV, I think, who have put this together, and it's their own US streaming service for catalog content. So now we have two of these, which is it's pretty wacky.
Yeah, I think that they're going to be able to coexist. I know that the instant reaction is like, oh my God, what happens now? Like, one is going to kill the other. But I actually think that, like, The first thing to remember in that is that, hey, everybody, the British have made lots of really good TV. So there's enough to go around. And I think that Acorn's been around for like 35 years and they've been doing something like that. They've been doing a ton of good stuff. And they're also a little bit more international and they're not just Brits.
Right.
Next week, I'm going to review something from Ireland. So, you know, there's that. But I think they could both. I don't know how much BritBox costs. That's the only problem. But Acorn's like $5. So, yeah, I think we can coexist peacefully.
Yeah, there were a lot of rumors that the BBC was working on this iPlayer International, which like iPlayer is their watch it later service in the UK. And it sounds like what happened is that they were going to do that and then they ended up aligning with one of their UK broadcast competitors to make this partnership to do BritBox in the US. I have also heard that, you know, this is not exclusive stuff. A lot of this stuff is non-exclusive. So it may be British TV that you already have on Acorn or you already have on Netflix or Amazon. So we'll see. The thing that baffles me, and again, this is a nerd alert, so I'm sorry.
I loved the entire catalog
of the old Doctor Who, the 1963 until 1989 Doctor Who, was taken off of Hulu a few years ago, like a year and a half ago. It has not resurfaced anywhere. It's possible a lot of that stuff was based on like the old versions. They did a lot of like remasters. They fixed a lot of the technical problems with these old British TV shows and released those on DVD. Those never made it to Hulu. So I kept thinking, well, they're probably kind of reforming their streaming library. But now we're at the point where the BBC has launched their US streaming service and Doctor Who's not on it, the classic Doctor Who. And everybody I know who's a Doctor Who fan is like, where is it? Because you would think it would be the perfect show because it's got such a huge catalog to make available on streaming because you could get people in. And if you're the owner of the property, like the BBC is, you really want to be able to, it's like perfect synergy, right? So I've got a couple theories. One is that my friend who listens to TV Talk Machine, Stephen Schepansky in Edmonton, he has this theory that maybe Amazon actually has the Doctor Who rights period and is not interested in old Doctor Who because it's old and boring and streaming services only care about what's new. That's an interesting idea. Somebody thought maybe they're holding it back. Either it's not ready or they want to hold it back for when people are talking about Doctor Who, maybe when it comes back in April or when the season finale airs in like July, and they'll drop it then. But it is this big, like they should put the Doctor's face, one of the 13 faces, on the side of a milk carton because where is this? It's like the crown jewels. You've got like 20-some seasons of show. You've had them on DVD. They are out there and they seem to just not, and they were on Hulu, and now they're just nowhere. Like two British TV services, including one co-owned by the BBC, and there's no Doctor Who. Where is it? It's baffling.
Yeah, that's troubling.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Maybe there's something legal about it. Maybe there's something technical about it. But it does seem a little weird because, like, I know a lot of people, and granted, I know a lot of Doctor Who fans, but I know a lot of people who would like access. And, like, the DVDs have gone out of print. They're starting to go out of print. Like, there's got to be. Streaming is the place for this stuff. But who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny you say nerd alert, but that's actually a big story. I mean, that's a big gap of Prime TV that's like missing.
Just where did it go? Like it was on Hulu, it went away. Now, and I think everybody thought, well, BBC is doing this US streaming service. That's where it'll go. And it's not there. What is happening? So I don't know. They're in like little 25-minute chunks. Like it is super bingeable. I you would think it would be a perfect property for that, but not that it's for everyone. You know, 1972 BBC sci-fi shows are not, that is an acquired taste, and I'm not sure even I have acquired it, but having it available, people would dip in and give it a try, and there would be like little watch lists, and it could be really great for the BBC if they would do it. Anyway, BritBox, it's out there. You can check it out if you like British stuff, if you like Acorn. You know, it's a competitor there that ITV and BBC are doing. So we'll see.
Definitely.
Our friend, the MVP, My Vogue on Poetry, wrote
in the
716, saying, this is okay. So this goes back to Alan asking about romantic comedies on TV last week. Mm-hmm. And MVP wrote in, Man Seeking Woman is a good romantic comedy.
Yeah, I guess so, sure.
Mm-hmm. And he says, Jason, were you thinking of A to Z last year? And yes, that is what I was thinking of, which it died.
Oh, that was not a good show.
Not good. No. Another Twitterer, Sakiratis, I totally butchered that, said Man Seeking Woman and You, Me, Her, maybe. Okay. Mm.
Yeah, that's on the audience channel, I believe.
Hmm, look at you with the knowledge.
Polyamory.
Yeah, that's cool. NG Green, so that's a listener, NG Green, he does not identify beyond that, says Master of None might work. It's sort of like there's a lot of stuff mixed in Master of None, but there is a little bit of a romantic through line in there too.
Uh-huh.
And I had several people write in and say, why couldn't you guys mention You're the Worst, which while being kind of anti-romantic in one way, is also a romantic comedy. It absolutely is.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
And I can't believe we didn't think of it, because you and I both love that show, and there it
well,
is.
I think it was, I think we chalked that up, at least for me. I was brain dead at that point. I was like, TV,
don't ask us questions at the end of the week. Let's just to make it clear, people, we record this late in the afternoon on Friday, okay? And that question came up at the end of the podcast, at the end. Yeah. We were both bears of very little brain at that point. Anyway, You're the Worst. There you go. I think I actually would say, despite how the whole premise is that they're kind of awful, I actually think that that is a perfect kind of analog of like the romantic comedy they meet and we see their relationship progress. You're the Worst is that. It absolutely is that.
Yeah, I mean, Catastrophe would probably qualify. I think we said that
I think
last year.
I think that one we managed to pull out, because Catastrophe very clearly is this too.
Yeah.
All right, Hobo Eric wrote in from the Plus 44.
Oh, well, never not funny.
Uh-huh. With a challenge to us.
Okay, Hobo Eric.
Hobo Eric says, watch Feud. You're both missing out on great acting by some of the best actors around. Your Ryan Murphy-based bias is blinding you to another great FX series. It has none of the hallmarks of his normal chaotic style. This story is extremely interesting and not played for too much camp. He shows the sides of these strong women that prove why they endured. I challenged myself a while back to return to the Americans and trust you. You were right. It is amazing, and I'm happy I listened to you. Now listen to me and watch Feud. Thank you, Hobo Eric from the Plus 44.
A lot of force behind that.
Yeah, there were capital letters in there. Did you get that? Because Watch Feud was in all caps there. I don't know, Hobo Eric. I'm not sure I'm really interested in watching drama about celebrities, no matter how good it is. But I do appreciate the recommendation. You know?
I worry about the camp part, but yeah, I'll try.
All right. Okay. All right, Hobo Eric. I hope you're happy now.
Good point.
Tim will probably watch one at some point.
Thanks. More work.
I will probably not. All right. This is from Marlene, OG from the Five and Dime. Very nice.
Nice. Okay.
Says, first off, Jason, your pitch for membership finally worked on me. Thank you. Excellent.
Oh,
welcome.
Wow. Yeah.
I want to ask a somewhat philosophical question. Recently, I saw someone comment on how stressful it is to be a TV fan these days. So much to watch, and so much of the best of it is so tense, suspenseful, dystopian. I would say anti-heroes also throw in there. There are great dramas that are not quite so stress-inducing, Rectify, the A-word, Atlanta, but one really has to hunt for them. My current refuge is sci-fi, and of course, comedies. Wondering what Tim and you think of this aspect of being a dedicated TV consumer. Is it stressful to be a TV fan is what Marlene wants to know.
Yeah, I think so. I tend towards those darker ones. I even tend towards sort of dark comedies. And there's some stress in them because there's anxiety. I mean, if you watch any episode or in any season of Louis, I dare you not. For me, I get all kinds of like stress because I get like, oh, it's so anxiety producing because it's like embarrassing and, you know, and... but yeah, I think you watch The Americans and you're like, whatever, and The Leftovers, you're like, all these things where you're just like, so I don't know. I kind of try to find my reprieve in, I think comedies. I definitely do comedies. You know, if I need a real, you know, you can always go back and do the, like a really good comedy, but if I'm in deep trouble, as you well know, I'll go back and do kid shows.
Yeah,
I'll do Maisie, a little bit of Maisie, and I'm good.
You gotta have a break. You gotta either go to a comfort zone with finding another show that's airing that will give you that break from the stressful stuff. This goes back to our conversation last week about binging and how, you know, you should binge if you want to, but a show like The Wire, I couldn't binge it because I needed to come down and like have some fresh air and something that was not totally crushingly depressing. So yeah, if you can't find it on current TV, and there is a bunch of stuff out there that is lighter. I think going to sci-fi is a great example of something that can often be a little bit different and give you a change of pace. But you know, the great thing about the world we live in is that whether it's on demand or on a streaming service, there's a lot of catalog stuff. Go find some comfort food. Find something that makes you, you know, whether it's Maisie or, you know, I watched a couple episodes of Stargate last week. Remember Stargate? It is comfort food for me. It is a totally lighthearted adventure show. And it's like, you know what? I want that right now. I need a little bit of that. It's been a tough time. I want a little lighthearted adventure. And everybody should be able to find your own comfort food of TV.
Well, yeah, I did a thing right when Trump was elected saying, and you hear some stuff if you want to just like not kill yourself and just like watch this stuff. And I want to circle back to that. But it, for this particular conversation, I'll just do a little teeny about face and revert back to Indy Sarah's comment. I would say watch The Detectorists. To me, that is really calming. I think I noted that in my review. I can't actually remember now. But the feeling that I got when I watched The Detectorists was, I literally like an exhale, because these guys don't really have that much to do all day. And I, you know, I'm not saying that like I'm under a you know, bunch of stress to do 10 million things. I'm just kind of hardwired to be, I just get more anxious and like wound up, because I logistically, if I have 10,000 things to do, whether they're hard or not, it's not the thing. It's just like, oh, you got to drive across town 5 times. You got to be here to pick that up. I got to do this, blah, 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 blah. All these deadlines start piling up. That kind of stuff makes me really anxious before I get to watching the shows. And then if you get like a, you know, whatever, if you get a, you know, I guess The Americans would be a perfect example of, but the hour finishes and my muscles are tightening. The Detectorists was a great way to just like turn it on and say, okay, here's guys who like wake up and they're in the English countryside and they don't seem to be in a rush at all in this little town. And it makes me want to take a vacation there. And I'll do a little detecting work where I get my little, you know, metal detector and hopefully find something. It's a bottle cap or a metal car.
That's right.
I'm okay with that. I like that lifestyle.
Fantastic. All right. I will put a link in the show notes to your piece about how TV can save us from post-election grief, because it still applies.
If you're feeling down about anything,
give it a go. Andrew wrote in and said, Tim, how do you think Colbert is settling into late night now? I think he's finally showing his class and letting his skilled satirical teeth show. Love to all your marching mothers.
Of course, that's nice. I think I might have touched on this with David when he was sitting in. I think that Colbert's totally in stride right now.
Yeah.
And it's great.
I agree.
And he's, you know, the fact that he's been beating Fallon is just miraculous. Mm. Really. That's really miraculous. So, and he's been doing it pretty consistently. And so it's not a fluke. And I think it's because, you know, look, I vowed on Twitter. I wrote a whole story about, like, I didn't watch any of the election because politics makes me insane and I hate politics. And I have all this other stuff to divert my attention. But I think once Trump was elected, it was like this whole, like, just reinvigorated and angry and the wanting to resist and wanting to, like, be outraged all the time, or just being outraged, not wanting to be outraged. I think people really, whether they wanted to actually do that or not, they're finding that they can't not talk about it or tune into it. And they want to know, like, who's going to call out this lunacy. And there's where you get, you know, we've talked about Sam B and obviously others, but like, that's where Colbert is. That's his strong suit. So that's why he's doing well. I think the numbers are up because people want to see it rather than not see it, which they kind of don't on Fallon, although he's trying to make a very poor attempt to get back into the Trump bashing. He just doesn't do a very good job of it. So that's, I think people are going to Colbert in time of need, shall we say.
Nat in the 206 says, my recollection is that Tim got bored watching Bosch on Amazon and always uses it as an example of Amazon doing a procedural that you could see on network TV. I think the cast is excellent, including a couple of standout actors from The Wire and a whole lot of great women. I can't think of any factory farm procedurals that tell a single story over a whole season. I'm really looking forward to season three. So Nat is putting a word in for Bosch, saying that maybe there's more there than met the eye at first glance.
It could be, and it could be something to circle back to. I think you look back when Bosch first started, it was really the advent of streaming and like, what can we get on streaming services? Yay. And then it's like, oh, we could get a CBS like procedural and not what I'm looking for. I can get that on CBS. So that probably had a little bit to do with it. And I think that, you know, it was going off of the books, and I think there was kind of a tried and true detective element to it that was very familiar, I thought. And it had been done in television before. But, you know, that doesn't preclude it from being its own kind of good and its own kind of comfort food. So it's probably a good idea to actually circle back and do that.
All right. So, Nat, your question has been lodged. Your complaint has been lodged.
Blake, heard, yes.
Blake in the 810 wrote in to say, and this is a rant, and it's great. So here it is. Why do we have stay tuned for scenes from our next episode previews? Spoiler alert, I'm going to watch next week anyway. I'm never on the fence wondering, I need a sneak preview of next week to decide whether to watch or not. Our hero is about to get squashed by a steamroller at the end of tonight's episode, but oh, wait, there he is alive and well in the previews. Do these spoilers actually convince anyone to watch anything? Your thoughts, Blake in the 810.
Well, love the letter. Thank you, Blake. Very good. I think it's it's tradition. Television, as you may have noticed, does not do a good job of breaking from tradition and history. They just do things kind of like as they've done it all the time. So there's that. I do think it builds a certain amount of excitement for some people, like, oh, look what happens. I want, you know, if you love a show so much at the end, you're like, oh, I want to see two or three more minutes or a minute and a half of video of next week. Yeah, like a drug. I think there's that element. But my philosophy has always been, do not watch those. They ruin things.
Yeah.
They are not true. They cheat. They're total red herrings. They're edited that way, and they're not put together by the people who make the show. They're put together by ad people. So I always say, do not watch. Yeah. But no one listens.
They're dumb, though. We agree. They're dumb. All right, one last letter for this one, which is from Cameron, again in the +44, because we release simultaneously worldwide, including in the UK.
Woohoo!
Where I heard from somebody the other day when I said we're going to be late with a podcast. They said, you know, well, your podcast doesn't come out on Friday. It comes out on Saturday. Thank you, Australia. Okay, fine. We hear you, Australia. This is from Cameron, though. Cameron says, hi, Tim and Jason. I just finished my 7-season binge of The West Wing. It was brilliant, moving, and a great parallel to the world around us. I started watching on your election day, and although it was outstanding, probably essential TV, I'm looking for my next watch to be a little shorter. So since the show is all about politics, I'm going to seek your expertise and let you vote on what the next binge should be. Here are what he says his options are: Westworld, Atlanta, Fargo, or Master of None. I'll start whichever you pick once you have both cast your votes. So you and I, Cameron's future binge is in our hands, Tim.
Okay, that one's easy for me. I say Fargo.
Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I mean, I have not seen Fargo, so I could go with you. I think all of these are great selections. But I know you love Fargo. I think that they're all departures from The West Wing, which is also good. So okay, I'm gonna give it to you. I'm gonna abstain and let you choose Fargo since you're so certain about it.
I'm certain. Yeah.
All right, Cameron, go watch Fargo. Season. Two seasons you've got to watch of that,
which you could catch up with in time to really get into the April season 3.
Yeah, that's right. Or whenever it airs in Australia, perhaps.
Right.
It'll air. Perhaps it already aired there in the past, because I don't know how time zones work. All right, well, here is how you get to send your emails in or your tweets or whatever and reach us. You can tweet us at TVTM. That's the best way to do it. I'm Jay Snell, and Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. But tweet at TVTM if you want those tweets read on the show. You can email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. You can post on our Facebook group, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. Those are the ways to reach us. And we will. And if you're a member, check the member feed, because we will have a bonus episode in the membership feed as well. TheIncomparable.com/members. So that's it. Tim, thank you as always, and we'll talk again next week.
Okay.